Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Football on Off The Ball.
There weren't huge chances or anything like that, but we looked like the team in the ascendancy. We looked like we were at it. Fine margins, kind of losing 50-50s in decision in our box, and to go into one down at half time, you were kind of scratching your head.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off The Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Friday morning, it is Off The Ball Breakfast. It is the 10th of July and it is 7:30. Very welcome along, wherever you're tuning in or listening in from. As you can see on screen, loads to come across the next, two and a half hours or so. We will discuss all of the morning's headlines and get into the back pages of the papers very shortly. We'll have Jim Gavin in studio from around 8:15 or so this morning as well, looking ahead to a huge weekend of All-Ireland Senior Football Championship semi-final action. We have Louth against Mayo tomorrow, Saturday evening, followed by Dublin versus Kerry in Croke Park on Sunday afternoon. Of course, the Tottenham Cup final tomorrow, Saturday afternoon, between Wicklow and Down as well. Alan Quinlan will join us around 8:45 a.m. or so to discuss the continuation of the Nations Championship and Ireland versus Japan tomorrow. And we'll talk some World Cup at around 9:15, as we now know the first of the semi-finalists at the 2026 World Cup. It is France who beat Morocco by 2-0 last night. Of course, three of the remaining quarterfinals to come over the coming days. Delighted to say it in the co-host chair this morning is Keith Tracy. Morning, Keith.
Morning, everybody. How are we?
Keeping well. On the left of your screen is our senior producer, Enda Coll. Good morning, Enda.
Good morning. How are we?
Keeping well. And in the mid-right of the screen is Cavan's Dara Smith-Knock. Good morning, Dara.
Shane, how are things?
Keeping you didn't well. Get the green memo, Shane.
I was just looking at that.
Yeah.
And you all of it.
Every different shade. Yeah, everyone's a different shade.
But ever so slightly different.
Yeah,
shape.
You went for the Tony Soprano look instead.
I like it. Yeah, I like it. Well, if someone had texted me and told me it would be, yeah, it's a green morning. Well,
that's a nice top though. Where'd you get that? Zara.
That's a Dunn Stores job.
Oh,
yeah, Dunn Stores.
We all just going to ignore the fact that Dara has a pair of rugby shorts on under the table.
Yeah. We should discuss.
I think shorts is one thing, but rugby shorts is next level.
You're betraying confidence there, Keaton.
The desk hides all.
Just letting them know.
Well, and Dara have both gone for shorts. I went for the professional. Myself and yourself went professional, Keith.
Professional, yeah.
We're hearing rumours that some people in Marconi House brought wore flip flops into the office yesterday, which is a heinous crime in terms of professionalism and work. Akin to putting fish in the microwave, we were saying this morning. Mm. But listen, each to their own.
Well, Dara's legs are very off putting. Quite good set of pins on you.
He does have a good set of pins.
Ambushed here, like.
No. That's a compliment. That's a compliment. Yeah.
When I walked into the office this morning, I seen the pins and thought,
yeah,
took me eye straight away.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and Enda too. Enda has the legs out as well.
Same as just above the thigh muscle as well, just to let you know.
Okay, very good. We're getting deep here. We're getting deep straight away. Loads to get into, lads. Plenty. We've done 3 minutes on fashion already, which is just like old times.
Yeah. Proper Friday show.
Keith Friday will be back soon, by the way. I know Keith, he's been on holidays, I think, for the summer a little bit.
Yeah, he is desperate to get back in.
He is, yeah. So we'll bring him back. Or has he been back?
Hasn't been back officially, but we do have a couple of Keith Friday questions.
Okay, very good.
So we had a Seamus Flanagan Friday.
Yeah.
Okay, a show
and
Seamus
we had a
Friday.
Keith Thursday.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with the Keith Thursday either.
Which I was done in by because I didn't know Cullum did an official like handshake and reintroduced him to the show.
Cullum shook my hand for Keith Tracy to leave and there was like, is Keith leaving? What's going on?
Yeah, like everyone else. Dermot Keenan says, morning lads, unlucky Enda going out of the sweepstick. The question, if you were JD and had England in the sweepstick, would you really be hoping they win? If you had England in the sweepstick, would you be hoping that they'd win? I mean, it's a personal thing. I think if I had England in the sweepstick, I'd still be hoping that they would falter at some point.
Yeah, I think so. Depends how big the cash prize is.
Yeah.
Is it life changing?
It's actually a good team to get in a sweepstake, you would say, because it's like putting a bet on a club that you don't particularly enjoy. Takes this thing out of them.
It's an each way.
Winning, you know? So, yeah, it is an each way bet.
Yeah, if you're happy if you win, you've got a few quid in your back pocket.
True. A lot of sweepstakes. My fiance's sweepstake in work had, I think you get 20 quid back. So everyone went a fiver in, but you get 20 quid back if you have the worst team in the tournament. She got Uzbekistan, which weren't far off. But I think it was it Iraq maybe?
It was Iraq. Minus 11 goal difference.
Dara must add in that slightly as well.
So I had Tunisia, who were by far the worst team throughout the entire tournament, sacked their manager after the first game.
Yeah.
And on the last, it was one of the last games, Iraq. I think they were beaten 5-1, 5-0 maybe.
Yeah.
And snatched it away from me, my fiver.
Mm. Who did you have, Enda?
I had Morocco.
Morocco.
So they were knocked out last night. Eve has the best chance of winning. You're still in, Keith.
I'm in Belgium. Belgium. I won't be in for long.
Eve has the best chance of winning. She has France.
Fair enough.
Which is good in itself, but she also has Norway.
Oh, wow.
She got Norway as her second seed team.
Double.
So she has a double chance of winning.
Having a good time, Eve, isn't she? Because Spurs are splashing the cash as well.
Mm. Yeah.
She'll be delighted.
Flying. Mm. I liked Haaland's press conference comments yesterday. Yeah. The English media asking him, England fans seem to be getting carried away with this, and he said, yeah, they definitely have an unbelievable chance, definitely favourites, pressure's all on them. Like it was a mastery in working the media to your advantage and heaping pressure on your opponents.
Well, we were wondering how long it would take for people to turn on the Viking row that they've been doing, the Norway fans. All it took actually was them to be drawn against England for the English media to start hyping up this is a bit weird, isn't it? Is this not celebrating colonialism a bit? Is the history of the Vikings not in question a little bit? All it took was the English media to get their hands on that and for it to be against them, for them to start
as if the English can give out about celebrating colonialism. I mean,
honestly,
the English need a bit more invention with theirs, don't they? Like, at least the Viking row is it's for Norway. They just come over and sing Oasis with the fans, and there's not an awful lot to it, is there?
True. I did enjoy the John Stones Declan Rice bit in the dressing room, though.
That was great.
Yeah, it was Tuchel's reaction, wasn't it? When he thought, oh no, I've lost the centre half here.
But that was probably a good insight into why he brought someone like John Stones along, because like
vibes,
keeping the vibes alive, keeping the crack high, and the like, he's obviously a good player as well, that helps. But at the same time, he's not peak John Stones, but if you're bringing that into the dressing room and it's all about a crack and the amount of time that you're spending with these people, you need that little bit of humour.
I still think Harry Maguire should have been on the plane. Like, I know hindsight's 2020, and there's talk of Mark Gahey having an illness or a knock. Gahey has, I saw on
the screen. Yeah, I know, he's struggling
either way. I just think having Harry Maguire in that squad would be
Lewis Hall. Luke Shaw.
Yeah.
Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah. And yet, here they are in the quarterfinals with a great chance.
They're doing great, but it's definitely going to be a stick to beat them with if England don't win the World Cup. So, I don't know. I'm not Trent's biggest fan, but when you see Kwanzaa starting right back and lunging into tackles like that, it's a little bit mad. But when the Balogun gets off his red card and the English player gets a double down second game, just seems a little bit crazy and all over the place. For sure, I'm not pointing out anything that people don't already know about FIFA.
Yeah, that's true.
We were talking about that before, like that England have been like a factory for right backs over the last 10 years and somehow they have a right back crisis at a World Cup because some of the best ones are sitting at home.
Yeah.
They have the crisis in 2002, wasn't it? Danny Mills was the fifth choice right back and he ended up playing a game or two. A load of injuries, I think.
Yeah.
Did he play against Brazil, Danny Mills, in that World Cup? I think he might have started. Could be wrong. Someone will correct me in the YouTube comments, but I know he's the fifth choice right back. Let us know in the YouTube comments.
Livramento, you've Reece James, Trent Alexander-Arnold. They've got so many good right backs. I know there's a few injuries there, but I think they'd be absolutely fine once Reece James is fully fit.
Mm.
He's absolutely great in there.
So we have Spain-Belgium tonight at 8 p.m. Irish time. Norway versus England tomorrow, Saturday night at 10 p.m. And also tomorrow night, Saturday night into Sunday morning, of course, 2 a.m. Irish time on Sunday morning, is Argentina versus Switzerland. France, of course, already through to their semi-final, which will be next Tuesday, July 14th at 8 p.m. Irish time. So France will play the winner of Spain-Belgium in that semi-final. And the following semi-final, the next day, Wednesday, 15th of July, also 8 p.m. Irish time, you'll have Norway or England against Argentina or Switzerland. It's setting up nicely, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're right about Danny Mills, started a right back that game, played the full 90.
Did he? Yeah. I think he was the fifth choice right back. So it might have been similar that they had a bit of a crisis at right back in that tournament. But what do we make of France last night, lads? They're just getting the job done nice and professionally, aren't they? Like, again, a couple of moments of real brilliance last night that got them over the line, and Morocco didn't really put... It was kind of a drab game in large part, but France got the job done.
Yeah, France got the job done. I thought Morocco were really poor throughout the whole game, in particular the first 45 minutes, but they were like that in the game beforehand, where they were really standoffish against Canada in the first 45, and the second 45, they go and blow them away 3-0. And after the first half, I thought maybe Morocco will come out and be a little bit more adventurous. I do think they tried to be, but I think France just had their number from start to finish. And I looked at the Opta stats, and I think France had like a 70% chance of winning with the Opta supercomputer. I thought it was an awful lot closer than that. In my mind, I thought Morocco were, I wouldn't say 50-50, but closer than what the Opta supercomputer was saying. And as soon as France win the penalty, you're thinking, okay, Mbappe will score here, and then that'll break the Moroccan hearts. There was 3 minutes and 12 seconds delay, and VAR was only responsible for a little bit of that. The referee just kept blowing his whistle and telling people to get back out of the 18-yard box, and he's pointing at this fella and that fella. It just seemed to take an absolute age, and it was a poor enough penalty from Mbappe. Having said all that, if you miss a penalty, it's not down to a time delay. You know, the player should always hit the back of the net from a penalty. So although it wasn't great, I'm not sure what the ref was doing in terms of why it took so long. It's a bit of a talking point, but the fact that France have gone on to win the game, I think they've been the most impressive team, the most balanced team. Attacking wise, they're unbelievable. Even the Paraguay game, their last game, that was like a gut check. What have they got in them? They've all sorts of talent, but can they beat teams when, you know, Mbappe was largely quiet, Barcola was quiet, Dembele was quiet, Elise had one of his very rare off games, and then you bring Doué off the bench and he dribbles past three or four Paraguayan players and wins a penalty. And they go and win it that way. The mentality, the cooled heads, not reacting to anything the Paraguay players were doing, was unbelievable. And obviously the Morocco game last night was a little bit of a different set of questions, different set of tasks. But they dealt with it really well. Most impressive team, and very, very difficult to see anybody. I said in my head last night, whoever wins this game, in my mind, is favourites to win the World Cup. And if they get past Spain, they've got one hand on it.
Hello, it's Owen Chehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves in questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Yeah. I do think Saibari was a big miss.
Yeah, massive.
For Morocco, they had no real outball at all except for Brahim Diaz, who, look, he actually did fine in the end, but when he got the ball, he had nobody to pass to because he was kind of the only one up the pitch. One thing that we're discussing after or during this game, after Mbappe scored that goal, was like, is Kylian Mbappe the best World Cup player of all time? I know it seems a bit premature to be throwing that out here, right?
A big shout.
Let me just run you through some of the stats. So,
go on.
Immediately, people are going to say Pele.
Yeah.
Hard to debate that, right? But Kylian Mbappe at World Cups. So, made his debut in 2018, 19 years old, youngest player to ever score for France at a World Cup. 4 goals, 1 final, 1 goal in the final to win the trophy. In Qatar 2022, 8 goals, won the Golden Boot, hat-trick in the final. USA so far, he scored 8 goals, and he is the current leading World Cup goal scorer with 20 goals ahead of Lionel Messi. You'd think that this might be Messi's last World Cup, so the likelihood is he's going to chalk on another 8 to 12 goals onto that record. He's only ever lost one World Cup game. That was against Tunisia in the 2022 World Cup. He has scored 12 goals in the knockout stages. He's played in two finals, won one of them, probably going to win this one. Probably going to win the Golden Boot at this one. Probably going to win player of the tournament at this one.
Probably. Big shout at this early
right?
stage.
Just yeah, calling yeah. it now. He's in the semi-final. Mm-hmm. So there's a high chance that he high probability that he will do that. He's averaged a goal a game in the World Cup, in three World Cups so far. I think there's a fair shout that Kylian Mbappe is the best World Cup player of all time.
I think there's a fair shout that he will be in the future.
Like if he wins this World Cup.
If he wins this World Cup,
if he wins this World Cup, his record will be played in three, won two, and he scored a hat trick in the final of the game that they lost in the final. And he won Young Player of the Tournament the first time round. He'll probably win Player of the Tournament this time round. So I mean, three World Cups, two wins, one loss, hat trick in the final, two Player of the Tournaments, Golden Boot in two of them, and all-time top goal scorer at the World Cup.
It's very hard to talk down Mbappe. If you want to go stats, it's very, very hard to talk down about Mbappe. But the feeling when Messi gets the ball compared to when Mbappe gets the ball, it's a different feeling for me. I sit on the edge of my seat, and I'm not talking about just this World Cup, but the World Cups that Messi has played in, you know, over the last God knows how many years he's been around. But the way he does it, I don't think Messi is all about pace. The ball manipulation can make you look really silly, whereas Mbappe will run past you really quickly and, you know, he'll skin you. I think it's Messi, and the fact that I think Mbappe's playing in a better French team, I think he's got a brilliant backup act, whereas Argentina, they're not bad players, but I don't think they're on the level of those French players that Mbappe has around them. So for me, in my lifetime, it would be Messi. I haven't seen Pelé play live. I haven't seen Maradona play live. So for me, Messi is the best ever World Cup. And that's obviously stats. People will drill me into the ground with Mbappe's stats, but there's this beautiful air of expectation when Messi gets the ball, and it's still there now at the age of 38, and he still has the whole of Argentina on his shoulders at this age. And if I was to say to you, do you think Mbappe will still be around at 38?
Probably not with his play style.
The way that he plays with his
pace, I wouldn't say so, no.
Unlikely.
So what is he now? 27.
But you look at it, Messi is, I wouldn't say reinventing himself, but that longevity to stay at that elite level is unbelievable. I'm not so sure Mbappe can do that, but you know, if we're talking World Cup alone, statistically, he's obviously up there. But for me, the feeling Messi gives me is unlike anybody else's.
Do you think reasonable shouts for this, and there are a few coming in the comments, would be Maradona?
Close.
What he did. Miroslav Klose.
Yeah. Good shout,
a couple of people saying that in the comments as well. Pele's the obvious shout. Lionel Messi is a big shout as well. Potentially Ronaldo Rosario could be in contention for this, although he was a fantastic club player, as is Mbappe. The argument is probably not, and I don't want to get it conflated with the two, is that I don't think that Mbappe is or ever will be a better player than Lionel Messi. But at a World Cup, I actually think it's amazing that we actually get to see the best version of Mbappe, because I don't think we've really seen the best version of Mbappe at club level. Like he's played at a top level, he's been fantastic, but can you imagine if Mbappe was able to take the form that he has for France in a club level? He would genuinely be hands down the best player in the world.
Zidane's been mentioned a couple of times in the comments as well.
Of course, El Zizou.
Pele won three World Cups. Say Mbappe wins this World Cup, that's him on to two. And he probably has another two World Cups in him. Like, he's 27. He'll definitely have the next one at 31. He'll probably have one at 35, all going well.
Yeah.
Probably won't, as you say, won't be going at 39.
Mm. Might have a home World Cup.
Yeah. So if he wins this one and wins one of his next two, he'll join Pele on three. Look, there are a lot of ifs and buts there.
There are. And I should say, like, key context to this with the goals is that there's more games than ever now. So like Mbappe has the luxury of an extra round of games to bump up his goal record at this World Cup. So, look, that's context as well. But I do think it's an interesting discussion.
I feel like there's more jeopardy in Argentina as well. If Messi doesn't play well for Argentina, Argentina don't play well. Whereas in France, you can afford for Mbappe to have a little bit of an off day, because there's so many other superstars.
They took him off at 2-0 yesterday.
Like
with Messi, he's pulled him out of the fire so many times. I would almost say every single time nearly. But I like the conversation though, because I think as sports fans, we're so reluctant to call anyone the greatest at something if they're still playing. I have no problem with it. Like, I think about Dupont. Dupont is the greatest rugby player of all time. People don't want to say it though because he's still playing. Pogacar in cycling, he's the best cyclist of all time.
Yeah,
people just don't want to say it
because they're not still going.
Yeah, so I like the conversation.
I think Messi's probably the only person that people have been very comfortable in saying yeah, he's the greatest of all time, and yet that always comes to the context, well, actually Maradona, you know, you can't rule out Maradona, you can't rule out Pele, but I mean Messi is the answer here. Another question for this Friday morning on the topic of Mbappe. Would he be the first French player that you would sign if you had the opportunity to sign any of their front three?
Oh, Jesus.
Or let's say front five. You had the opportunity to sign either Doué, Barcola, Dembélé, Mbappé, or Olise.
are
you taking Mbappé?
Who are you taking, Keith?
Olise. I have to. I just like him. Again, Mbappé's statistics are unbelievable, but at this moment in time, it would be Olise. I mean, that overhead, the bicycle kick he did was it last week when he hit the bar from the edge of the 18-yard box.
Some of his
torn, and yeah,
unbelievable.
The way he swivels his hips, unbelievable stuff. But to be honest, I wouldn't be disappointed with any of them. They're all unbelievable players, but at this moment in time, it would be Olise. But obviously, they're all game winners in their own right. Even Barcola, who was on the bench last night, he's been linked with Arsenal. I'd be delighted if Arsenal pick up Barcola on that left wing. So, any of them but Olise just for me at the minute.
Yeah, I think I agree. Like, Olise could probably play in four or five different positions if you wanted him to. Talk about him playing on the half turn, but he can also play right up there at the top, and then he can play on the wing. He can probably play behind the striker as well if you did want him to. So, I think it's Olise. And is he
24?
He's 24. Yeah. Like, the ceiling is so high.
Barcola's 23 and Doué's 21. Like, ridiculous. Yeah.
Doué's a phenomenal player as well.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Olise would have been my shout, and I even said probably Olise yesterday on the show, although Dembélé really made me question my ideas there after he spun that goal in with his right foot, because he could have easily hit that with his left foot.
Should Bono have saved
the
that
same
last night?
Corner.
Are we calling him Bono? Questionable.
I'm just calling him Bono. I know it's Bunu, but he has Bono on the back of his jersey.
Bunu is what people's calling him. Yeah, I've been calling him Bono.
I've been going Bono the whole
Bono's
time.
Bono's better, isn't it?
It's just easier.
It's Bono at the last World Cup. It's Bunu now.
He goes B-O-N-O on the back of his jersey, which gives us freedom, I think, to say Bono.
Let us know.
I know it's not Bono. A Fada, but he has a Fada in his name there somewhere as well.
There has to be a Fada, yeah.
Maxon.
Bono, B-O-N. BONO father would it be? Yeah.
He looked a bit nervous last night or something, didn't he?
Yeah.
Behind some of the shots. He
made a couple
tetchy,
of good saves, yeah.
He
did, yeah. Was it Dembele's when he could have done an awful lot better with him, just squirmed under him?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There was, who was on RTE last night? There was mad pronunciations. Bono, Bono, all sorts of pronunciations.
Kinder Bueno.
Kinder Bueno.
He's still solid. It's, in fairness, it's probably harsh. Dembélé got the ball away, got the shot away nicely, but it was one of those.
It is that fact that he's just so two-footed as well. It's like Mbappe took the penalty last night, but when you watch Dembélé take a penalty, he takes a straight run-up and he could genuinely go with his left foot or his right foot. So I just... Now,
that's a conversation I started with my young flit Teddy is all over the World Cup. He got the sticker book last week and he's flying through the stickers, loving it. But we were just watching the World Cup the other day and he said to me, I was talking to him all the time, talking to him about being two-footed and being able to play around angles. This is the way I speak to my seven-year-old, would you believe? But the conversation that came up, he said, well, how many players is there that are two-footed, Daddy? And off the top of my head, I went, oh, not an awful lot.
Yeah, true.
Naturally, just two-footed players that can play left and right. Dembélé would be one that Enda's just said. It's not an awful lot.
Yeah.
Would you say most holding midfielders can comfortably play with both feet?
Passing, you'd say, yeah. I think it's when it comes to the, like, a dead ball situation or a shot, like, they're obviously more difficult with your weaker foot, whereas you'd expect your centre midfielder to be able to take it with a strong foot and pass it off if it's the quickest option to get it away. But this is a conversation that gets me riled up because left footers, I feel, get away with absolute murder on this subject because...
No, I agree.
They get so much more leeway being bad with their right foot. It's accepted way too quickly that left footer, he can't take it on his right, can't use the right, can't cut in his right, he's left footed, can't take it to the byline if he's playing on the right wing because he's right footed. You would absolutely murder a right footer for that if they were so unwilling to use their bad foot, as left footers tend to be. I don't know if that's just anecdotal evidence or not, but
it's tougher to defend a left footer though, so there's more credit in the bank there.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. In that you're a more dangerous weapon for your team just because you're left footed. Do you know? You're left footed, Keith.
I'm left footed. Yeah,
but you could kick with both.
Yeah, I told the story many times. I don't know who I was playing for, but I was very, very young, and I remember somebody saying, "Show him on his right foot. He has no right foot." Being shouted from the sideline, I thought, "You won't shout that about me anymore." Mm. And when I went to Blackburn, there was this. We used to get a mannequin, put him on the edge of the 18-yard box. I would come inside, take a touch, and I'd just pass a shot to the far corner with my right foot. It was Damien Duff-esque, and that's all he used to say. This is what Duffer does. Just pass it into the corner. Don't shoot, pass. And before you know it, you're fairly confident with your right foot all of a sudden. And I'm not talking about shooting in 50-yard diags. I'm talking about being able to control it and flick it with the outside of your boot around the corner. If you're a winger and you can play off your left and your right foot, the right back, left back doesn't know what angle to show you, and if you can cross off both feet, you're a huge, huge weapon. So I was always told if you're 6 foot and left footed, you've got half a chance. So yeah, that's why I started practice. I actually, when I started playing football, I was right footed and right handed.
Really,
yeah. But yeah, I just started nailing down my left foot, and yeah, my left foot just came prominent.
I know lads who are left handed when they're right, but when they play golf and do everything, basically play pool, it's all right-handed.
I play snooker left-handed.
It's weird, isn't it?
But I write right-handed and play golf right-handed. I think it's just whichever way I picked up the golf club or the snooker cue, whichever felt comfortable, I did it that way.
Funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
Some comments in saying Cherokee is another good example.
Yeah, another one.
Yeah.
It's mad. He doesn't even get a mention. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. But even Mateta coming off the bench last night, and you're like, geez, most countries would love to have a target man like this,
you know,
man like
different, that, yeah.
Isn't it?
It's unbelievable.
Like, if the pace and skill of all them lads aren't working, whack Mateta up front.
Yeah,
like, it's another way to hurt people. It's, they've got a little bit of everything, the French. Difficult to see past them.
Another Friday morning quiz question.
Yeah,
threw this out in the office. He's a bit of a thinker. Two are immediately obvious for this, but just have a think for the third. So going into the quarterfinals, so the rankings change so quickly based on results. So, but going into the quarterfinals, five of the top eight ranked sides in the world made it to the last eight of this World Cup. The three that didn't make it were all managed by ex-Everton managers.
So the three
who were they?
That was amazing.
That are in the top eight in the world that didn't make it.
Hilarious stat to begin with.
We got two of these.
Two are immediately obvious.
Yeah, so we've Carlo Ancelotti with Brazil. Mm. We have Roberto Martinez with Portugal.
Yes.
And the other one has been stumping us since. And I'm trying to think, was it a country knocked out in the last 16? Was it a country knocked out earlier? Was it a country that... Well, who was knocked out...
Now, I should say, context of this is he's no longer in charge of the country now.
Oh.
So he has left his job since the World Cup.
But he started the World Cup as...
Started the World Cup as the manager of this country.
Yeah. Well, lads, who's that?
So that's obviously somebody who's underperformed massively.
The comments
I would actually say they performed quite well.
Are they giving it away?
The comments are...
Yeah, they've got it.
Are in already.
They performed reasonably well. I would say the expectations of this country are slightly higher based on their history in the tournament as opposed to their current quality.
Mm.
Based on their history in the tournament.
Yeah.
It's not Germany, it's not Colombia, it's not the USA, it's not Canada, it's not Mexico. Just name every country that's been eliminated at this stage.
Yeah.
It's not Croatia.
Croatia. Who is it obvious that we're missing?
It's funny that you're not getting in immediately, because I'd say 10 years ago they would be an immediate obvious choice as a top nation, but they've fallen so far down in our estimations that you probably wouldn't consider them a top nation anymore at football.
Wow. But they're at this World Cup.
They're a very iconic tournament team.
And they're at the World Cup.
They're still a decent team.
Yeah, they're still decent. They've got some good players, but they're no longer, you would say, in the top five conversation for nations. But they're an iconic tournament team.
Oh, Ronald Koeman.
Mm. There we go.
Netherlands.
Jesus, yeah.
You almost forget about Koeman as an Everton manager as well.
Should have got that earlier. But yeah.
Who was first in with that? Little Mouse 75 was the first
the question.
I was trying to think if Carlos Queiroz was ever the Everton manager. Yeah. Thinking if I missed Carlos there.
What? Good shout to all of you in the comments who got that quick. It's a good question, though. It's a good question.
It's a great stat.
Yeah. It's a great stat, though.
Yeah.
Fair play to Everton. The curse continues even over into international football.
It does.
Did you see the Jurgen Klopp comments on Mbappe, just to bring it back to the French captain?
Oh, yeah.
So Jurgen Klopp was speaking on Magenta TV. He's done a lot of punditry across this World Cup, but he revealed that Liverpool almost signed Kylian Mbappe when he was playing for Monaco. So he said that he flew over to Nice to meet the entire Mbappe family. And when they got to Nice, they boarded another private jet with five rooms. So this is a big plane. So then they flew around in a circle. They had dinner in the sky in this private jet because the best thing about it was they couldn't be seen, couldn't be papped while in the sky. So the rumors of this transfer couldn't get out before it had a chance. So they flew around a circle for a couple of hours having dinner with the Mbappe family, and then he went to Paris.
One of the great what-if potential transfers. But a few of them, in fairness.
Does show you that what modern football is a bit like. You know, Alex Ferguson used to book a hotel, a very fancy hotel down in, I believe it was down in Nice or potentially in Monaco. It was a five-star resort. If he was going out to do a transfer with a European player, he would meet them in this hotel because he knew he would get full privacy to do the deal and also would, you know, wine and dine the family and try to impress the players. But now we're doing that in the sky in private jets owned by the families.
The environment won't thank them.
No.
Around in circles up there.
That's true.
If five rooms on a jet, is that like, you know, when you get a tent and it says it's four rooms and it's not...
fit 10 people.
It's not really like...
Yeah, possibly.
Just a load of partitions as you get in there.
Yeah. Prefabs, basically. Yeah.
You're telling me that's they have to. I know about the privacy and all that, but you're telling me they can't lock a door. Just walk in and lock a door.
Yeah. Where are you
leave
doing?
Leave your phones out there.
You're not doing on the street.
It's being seen on the walk in. If although you can go in different doors and stuff.
Do you know, like it seems like they're going to an extreme just to go to the extreme.
If you're a football fan though, and you work in a hotel or a restaurant or something, and you see even separately walking in Jurgen Klopp and you see Mbappe walking, you're like, that's so weird. Seen Klopp and Mbappe
a pair of glasses or something. You know what I mean? Let's charter a flight and go around in circles.
But
wasn't it Eddie Howe that was papped in a hotel lobby waiting for the Newcastle board members when he was joining the club as manager? I think it was. Like you just can't rely on hotels anymore
in this day and age.
If you look at what happened with the Southampton stuff, people have got spies everywhere now working for these clubs. It was so Alex Ferguson, I can't find the European hotel, but it was the Landmark hotel he used in London to sign or negotiate with Gareth Bale and Wayne Rooney. So he would often use these. I remember he wrote about it in his book about meeting these players abroad. I think it was also where he met Jurgen Klopp for dinner when he was trying to court him to become the next United manager after him.
Right. Wasn't it Berbatov that was in the floor of the car in the back seat underneath a load of jackets with Ferguson one time when United were signing him? I think they picked him up at the airport and threw him in the back of the car and on the ground so the Paps wouldn't catch Berbatov in the back.
Well, that was the greatest transfer reveal of all time.
Yeah, after one of the greatest deadline days of all time.
And you'd never have heard, that would never have happened now with Fabrizio Romano running around chatting to agents.
He has ruined it. He's great at his job.
Yeah, but there must be 10 of them.
There's no deadline day shocks now, is there? Because you sort of get it gets teased out just before the breaking news comes. Yeah.
It's crap now.
I'm trying to think of the Liverpool team at the time. So that was 2017. So going into the 2017-18 season, I presume.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like you're looking at Suarez is still there, isn't he?
Yeah. Tail end. Possibly.
I'm going to pull up the squad here. Hold on.
He'd got starting in the team anyway. Salah, Kylian Mbappe, put it that way.
Salah came in that summer.
As did Virgil van Dijk.
Like, the
could have been a big summer. It already was a big summer.
What a team that could have been.
Jesus.
There's been some great nearly stories, hasn't there? Mm. I think Blackburn nearly signed Zidane back in the day. I heard rumours about that when I was there. There's been so many of those close stories.
Did you ever nearly sign for someone, like very, very nearly?
Celtic was the closest I went, before I signed for Blackburn when I was 15, it would have been 13, maybe 14, they wanted me to go and be a professional straight away because there's no YTS, and I was in Parkhead, I had Tommy Bourne's next to me, and we had all the contract out in front of me, my mother and father, my family were with me. And the digs that I wanted to be in wasn't quite ready. They were waiting for one of the lads' contracts to finish so he would move on and then I would take his place. And that was literally the stumbling block. Jeez. And I ended up going to Blackburn.
What year would have this been?
I went to Blackburn in, I think, 2005. So maybe 2003, guessing, in and around there. Don't quote me on that, around that.
That would have been Martin O'Neill's.
Yeah, but it wasn't Martin in the room. I'm sure it was Tommy Burns.
Really. Yeah, Tommy Burns would have been directly involved in the transfers or any new players coming into the club.
Yeah, he was sort of the one that liaison. Was supposed to be leaning over me for the snap and that. But once the digs wasn't there, because there was a snooker table in the digs and he had a good looking daughter, and that was me sold on the gaff. And now Darren O'Dea, all the Irish were in that dig, so I wanted to be in there. I thought I'd be comfortable. But yeah, that was the stumbling block.
Jeez. It's the little things, is it?
Yeah.
Someone said Roy Keane's story with Kenny Dalglish at Blackburn was funny. What was the Roy Keane story he told about almost signing a player at the?
That was Robbie Savage.
Yeah,
so he rang him up, and
was Matthew Upson as well? I'm thinking of another one. There was a couple.
That's the one.
Was it Upson?
Was it Upson?
It wasn't Upson.
No, it was. Are you talking about when he walked out of the stadium and then called him?
Yes.
Oh, that was that. Not O'Neill. Gary O'Neill.
I don't think it was O'Neill.
No, it was a player that there's two players that share the same name. One goes by Matthew and one goes by Matt, I think.
I know. Yeah, it's who the hell is it? Matt Taylor.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Matt Taylor. Yeah, yeah. And is there a Matthew Taylor then?
Possibly. Received a text from Taylor in the car park saying he was signing for Bolton instead after walking him around Sunderland, and he said he could literally see him coming leaving the car park. When he got the text, thanks but no thanks.
You can understand why you fire a text there, can't you?
Oh, you're not going to
fire a text and turn the phone off. Yeah. Turn that back on a few hours when Roy's got over.
Exactly, that's the end of that. What do we make, Keith, of the Ringmahon Rangers verdict come in yesterday? From the FAI, Ringmahon Rangers banned from the men's FAI Cup for 5 years and fined €5,000 after they withdrew from that upcoming second round tie with Bowes. So this is the amateur Cork side, former side of Caoimhe and Kelleher's, and they've been excluded from the FAI Intermediate Cup for 3 seasons as well. So this game is due to happen next weekend on the 19th of July, but the Munster Senior League team deciding to forgo the fixture. One of the reasons given in the statement was the possible clash with an All-Ireland Hurling Championship final appearance for Cork, which obviously hasn't materialised after Cork's defeat to Galway in the semi-final. But the FAI have come down heavy, really setting a precedent here for other teams who might consider pulling out of big games.
Yeah, it's difficult. I understand why the FAI have come down so heavily, because it's not a good look on the tournament. We all want every round to be played, and you don't want these bigger clubs, and Bowes would be a bigger club in this tournament, to be getting these boys. And look, I've been in Pat's under-17s team. I understand how academies and, you know, these underage teams work. If you're struggling to field the team or the logistics of it aren't great, I'm sure there's, you know, under-21s players, under-18s players that would absolutely be chomping at the bit to play against Bowes. So I'm sure they could have fulfilled the fixture, but for one reason or another, they haven't decided to do it. And yeah, it does seem heavy-handed by the FAI, but you don't want other clubs doing this, so you need to set a precedent, and hopefully now it will put any teams off doing this again, because boys is not what we want. People just waltzing into the next round without having to win, because it's not a good look for the tournament on a whole at all.
Yeah, bizarre story.
Mm. Very harsh, but I mean,
yeah, 5 years is a big punishment. But then again, what do you do? Like,
if you have another team that are thinking, you know what, we might pull out, that puts you right off doing it, doesn't it? I think 5 years and £5,000 fine. Well, we're not pulling out.
It's a lot.
Do you think teams would have thought that if they just gave him 2 years? Do you know?
Even that's in
5 years is a long time.
5 years is a long time.
It's a long time. Yeah, banned from a competition.
It's a long time, but it's also a competition that they're never really going to win anyway, you know? Like, it's good to have a cup run, and it's good to get out and challenge yourself against League of Ireland and opposition. They're never going to win it, are they?
No, but you can make money off a bit of a run, and you can also, I don't know, can you put players in the shop window like Caoimhín Kelleher? They're making a serious mint off Caoimhín Kelleher.
Well, I think that's something that doesn't taste right in the mouth of the staff. They're a little bit cash rich at the minute because of the Caoimhín Kelleher kickback money. Have they decided, oh well, we don't really need the funds, it's all, you know, it's all the same to us whether we get through a round or we get kicked out? I think that's something that's lingering in the background, and you know, whether you're financially good or financially bad, that shouldn't come into your thinking whether or not to play this game. And I feel like it has crept into their thinking, which is not a good look again.
Yeah, disappointing for sure. We're obviously going to be chatting to Jim Gavin very shortly, the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship semi-finals taking place this weekend. Fascinated to see John Kiely's comments. I know you've probably discussed it, lads, during the week on getting the Limerick fans behind them in that semi-final. Does it have an impact, Keith, as a former sports person, like the way he spoke about it, getting the fans on board and they weren't doing their job, essentially, that every little moment that you can get behind the team in the stadium can really make a difference. Like, does it make a difference?
Yeah, massively. Sometimes you come out and the crowd are fine and you know you don't really notice anything, but then all of a sudden there's a big tackle or, you know, a goal goes against you, or there's something that brings the crowd into play, and all of a sudden it's electric and the hair is standing up on the back of your neck and you're feeling like you can run quicker than you could, and you know, you're stronger than you were. The fans have that ability, they can do that, and it's that old cliche of the 12th man and getting behind the team. I've been in games where you come out and it's easy, ozy, and everything's okay, but then all of a sudden there's a flash point and, you know, you're 10 feet tall. But you need to be careful about criticising the fans. If you come out and say, you know, the fans need to be a little bit more boisterous or get involved in the game more, fans can sulk as well. They don't always react in the right manner, so you need to be careful about how you word it. But they're getting the right reaction, and that's exactly what you want. But this new thing, and this is totally separate, I'm talking about football here, the amount of players now that G up the crowd. And it's like after, literally they tip off, there's a 50-50 tackle and they're pumping up the crowd. You're like, it kicked off 2 minutes ago, mate. Calm down. But it just seems everybody's G'ing up the crowd these days. But yeah, a good crowd can definitely make the difference. I mean, look at Mexico and the Azteca. It's not because they're a brilliant footballing team, they're so difficult to play against. I know altitude and everything else comes into it, but the crowd are a big help there as well.
Mm. Fair enough.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.